Welcome to Hot Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction haunt entertainment community. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And we return again. Happy Monday to you, or happy whatever day of the week you choose to listen to us. Mm-hmm. We don't set your schedule. That's your job. We don't micromanage your life. We're not like those other podcasts that tell you when you have to listen to us. No siree. We're available 24/7 at your leisure. I just love making these more and more awkward every time to watch Crystal's reaction across from me. It's kind of...
Yes, but they can't see that.
Oh, but they can hear it.
I'm sure.
Your giggles are infectious. Like an STD.
Oh, great. Thanks.
You're welcome. On that note, everyone, if I do get murdered by Crystal tonight, I'm sure we are about...
I think that this would stand in my defense.
You will certainly hear about it first at hauntweekly.com. We're also hauntweekly on Twitter, hauntweekly on Facebook. YouTube.com/hauntweekly is our YouTube channel. Wait a minute. You said something different, Jonathan.
You did.
We're coming back to that. Put a pin in that. Put a pin in it. No, put a pin in it, motherfucker. I said put a pin in it. Put a pin in it. We're coming back. We're also at Google.
I don't know. You're sitting there angrily pointing at the microphone. Like they can see you.
We're also available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, and anywhere that finer podcasts are sold. Mm-hmm. All right. All right. This week we are doing the third part of the trilogy, tentatively entitled The Best Room. I have no idea what I'm actually going to entitle it whenever it comes up. But whenever we actually put it out there, but I'm tentatively titling The Best Room because we did the first room, the last room, and now we're doing The Best Room, talking about how to make the most memorable room in your haunt.
Yep.
The big idea is we talked about kind of why the first room and the last room weren't necessarily. Now we're going to talk about how to actually make the best room, that room. But first things first, we got to do our conference reminders. Odd episode. Crystal, do this the honors.
Hey, June 7th through the 9th, it's Midwest Haunters Convention in Schaumburg, Illinois at the Renaissance Schaumburg Convention Center Hotel. They will be touring Dead Rising, Midnight Terror, Massacre, Basement of the Dead, and Hell's Gate. MidwestHauntersConvention.com for more info.
All right, guys, listen, this is coming up next weekend, right?
Yep.
If anyone out there is in the area and is kind of sitting on the fence and you're listening to this podcast, go.
Yeah.
Get off the goddamn fence and pull the fucking trigger already. Seriously. A, the tours are amazing.
Yeah.
The tours alone. Honestly, I don't know much about the rest of the conference other than it's run by some awesome people.
No.
I know the people who run it. I'm sure it's going to be an awesome conference. But those tours are worth it. Those haunts, all of them are worth it. Go. Get it done. Make it happen.
Okay.
Jonathan Bailey told you to. You can put that on the little reason line when you sign up. They may not have a reason line. I didn't.
Yeah.
We're not in the area. We didn't go.
You're in rare form today.
Yes, I am. Thank you very much for noticing. All right. After that, it's Michigan Haunt Fest at the Oaks Campground in Munith, Michigan, June 21st through the 23rd, featuring make and takes, a campsite decorating contest, and a pancake breakfast. Some of the proceeds benefit the Humane Society. MichiganHauntFest.weebly.com for more information.
Okay, and then July 27th, it's Haunter Horde Gathering at Mount Carroll, Illinois at the Mount Carroll Bowling Center. They will be touring Raven's Grin Inn, auction for scares that care and don't be a monster. There's free pizza with your $5 admission. You have to pay for your booze. You also have to pay $15 for the Raven's Grin Inn tour. HaunterHorde.com for more info.
And that's H-O-R-D-E, just in case you don't know how to spell horde.
Yes.
Which, I mean, we're in a post... In a post-Lord of the Rings world, I think we all know how to spell horde, but...
I don't know.
Just offering a little help. But definitely, this is another one, if you're on the fence about, you need to go.
Yeah.
Because I can also vouch very directly for Raven's Grin Inn. It's amazing. You want to go, get the tour. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, July 27th through the 28th in Mesquite, Texas, it's the Texas Haunters Convention at the Mesquite Convention Center. Features a meet and greet and a costume ball and an amazing looking showroom floor. TexasHauntersConvention.com for more information.
Okay, August 3rd through the 4th, it's Midsummer Scream in Long Beach, California. The Long Beach Convention Center features dozens of on-site haunted attractions and experiences, a Hall of Shadows Dark Zone, as well as a Screaming Room Film Festival, a fashion show, and live theatrical performances. MidsummerScream.org.
Yeah, this is one of those I would really love to go to.
Yeah.
Just to see the Hall of Shadows, if nothing else.
Yeah.
12 mini haunts done by different haunts. Come on.
Yeah.
What about that doesn't just, like, scream my name, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, after that, in Nashville, Tennessee, August 6th through 8th, it's the Room Escape Conference and Tour at the Music City Center. RoomEscapeShow.com to learn about the specific room escapes they will be visiting.
Then August 23rd through the 25th, it's CreepyCon Halloween and Horror Convention in Knoxville, Tennessee. At Jacob's Building. We don't know who Jacob is.
It's a thing, though. I looked it up. It's a thing.
Yes. It's the same joke as last week. Features workshops.
Oh, well, let's come up with new jokes. What are we, the Big Scary Show? Come on.
For coming up with new jokes?
No, yeah, they're the ones that come up with the new jokes,
exactly.
Not us. We recycle here. We're environmentally friendly with our humor.
I know. We've got quotes being thrown at us for t-shirt ideas. Mainly because you say they're the same jokes all the time.
Oh.
Okay, anyway, back to the Creepy Con. It features workshops, exhibitors, and a zombie beauty contest. CreepyConKnoxville.com for more info.
I don't recycle my... Yes, I do. Oh, Lord. What the hell were we talking about? I totally lost the plot.
Best rooms.
Best rooms. Well, first things
first. We just finished.
Well, yeah, we got a couple of updates, though.
We
first
do.
Thing, we got some housekeeping items. First things first, you might have noticed a minor change in our intro where we talked about all our social media. Thanks to the efforts of TJ Logan, who got us our last few subscribers and put us over 100, we now meet the threshold to have a custom name on YouTube.
La-di-da-di.
Ooh, we're a fancy like now. You know, we're basically like, you know, like 0.5% away to being PewDiePie at this point.
No, no. Why would you?
Why
are you comparing us to horrible things?
Horrible people.
Yes.
I'm not up to speed on who the big YouTubers are. I am old and curmudgeonly. But anyway,
thank you, TJ.
Hey, for getting us over the top. We now are youtube.com/hauntweekly. It does work. I tested it. But while I was there setting that up, I took some time out to do some maintenance, much needed maintenance on the channel. I'd been getting the new episodes, but not getting the proper TLC. So here's the things I did. First off, the playlists have been updated and are complete and should auto update. When I set them up initially, I thought they were going to automatically add. I thought I had done that. Apparently I screwed that up way back when I first set it up and I didn't realize it. I have fixed it. I watched a YouTube video about how to YouTube, because that's the level of hell I was in. I'm pretty sure Dante didn't have one that went that low.
No.
But anyway, so I did that, got that working, and this will kind of be one of the actually, next week will be the test, because the news playlist, we'll see if it works. But hopefully, it works fine. Yeah, and they're also now fully accessible from the channel homepage. And we've also created and added and set up the interviews playlist. So anytime we speak with Japes or the Women in Haunting series or the Little Crafty Devil we recently did, all those, if you like the ones where like smarter people come and talk to us, there's a whole playlist of just those.
Yeah.
That'd probably be the playlist I'd start with.
Yeah.
Now I did notice when we were in there that there were a few back episodes that were missed. I don't know how that happened. I'm going to look into that. No idea why or how. I will fix those. But yeah, basically we have a real YouTube channel and channel page now. We actually are set up like adults.
Yay!
So that is a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very happy about that. Also, real quick, apologies to Kelly Rays. She actually a while back had a very good suggestion,
mm-hmm.
which was that we come up with a definitive list of horror games that haunters should play. So we've talked about Layers of Fear,
right,
and a few other horror games, but she's right, a rapid fire, hey, these are some really awesome horror games that inspired us, or that we know to be awesome, even if we haven't had a chance to play them. We don't have every system on the planet, basically, is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And we can't play every game because of time and money and, like, responsibilities like a podcast and, and like, jobs and stuff. So, yeah. But, yeah, I think that it was a great idea. I told her I was on it, and then I started it. Then I dropped the dog.
Yep.
I actually got a pretty good ways into it and just let it drop. I don't know what the hell happened to me. So we're going to pick it back up. We can't do it next week. It's a news episode. I'm shooting for the one after, though.
Yeah.
And this way we don't have to sit around and lie in bed and go, what do you want to talk about on Home Weekly next week? The angsty weekend conversation we have sometimes.
Yeah.
All right. But that brings us to our topic this week, the best room. Now, 2 weeks ago, we discussed the first room.
Mm-hmm.
And we discussed why it's important, why it is a crucial room. It plays a very essential role in the haunt. But why maybe there's a tendency to overemphasize it, especially among the haunt design side. Where they're like, oh yeah, you've got to put all your energy into the first room. Not necessarily. It's got a core function, you want to put something good in there, but you don't necessarily have to really throw all your eggs into that basket. But we also talked about various approaches to it, ways people have handled it we've seen, way things we've done, etc. And then last week, we did the same thing for the last room. Why it's important, the job it plays, how it interacts with the crowd in the queue line. Basically, talking about it as a customer, talking about the various approaches we've seen to making that really, really work and really stick. But here's the thing. When we embarked on those two, which, like I said, the original idea came in a dream, literally.
Yeah.
So that was probably the most helpful dream I've ever had. It gave me three podcast ideas.
Yeah, no kidding.
It'd be nice to have more of those and less of the terrors.
Yeah.
But, anywho, don't bring it down. Don't bring us down. long story short, though, we were talking about it before we really got to work on the first podcast, and we realized that very few of the rooms that really stood out in our mind that we've seen in haunts, either here in the New Orleans area, Atlanta, Chicago, St. Louis, any of the towns we visited, very few of the rooms that we really remember were the first or the last rooms.
Yeah.
They were at various other points in the haunt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's kind of frustrating.
It is and it isn't at the same time. Because some of these rooms really, really fit with the story and the theme they were trying to tell.
It does.
And it made a lot of sense to put it where it was. And it was at a point where it was still very easily remembered.
Yeah.
Because this is the thing that I think a lot of haunters need to understand. Yeah, you probably know every room in your haunt intimately. And every meaning of the word intimately. And hopefully not every meaning of the word intimately. But you know every room in the haunt very well. Your customers that are only going to spend 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes, whatever, right? Are going to walk out and they might remember one or two things.
Yeah.
Especially after 24 hours. There's a reason when we do the garbage horror reviews for haunts. We basically try to run home from the haunt trip and get in the studio as soon as possible.
Yeah, and that's even with our notes.
And yeah, and we take meticulous notes. One of the tricks that we do is we bring a voice recorder with us. It's called an iPhone. We don't actually buy a separate voice recorder. What are we, Luddites? Maybe we should, though. That'd be kind of convenient now that I think about it.
That would.
It would, actually. Hang on. We're buying a voice recorder now. See, I can change my views, but we would take a voice recorder or a voice recorder app, and while we're in the parking lot or on the drive to where we're going, talk about what we saw and try to recall everything we can, get it onto the voice recording. One thing we learned, this is helpful for anyone who does this, is if you want it transcribed, upload it to YouTube as a private video. YouTube will transcribe it for you. It's an automatic transcription. It ain't going to be perfect.
Right.
But good enough. And we actually have the text notes because of that.
Yeah.
Saved us a lot on dictation.
Yes, it did.
So basically, that is, I don't know why that's a random tip, but anyways, that's what we would do because we knew from experience that if we waited more than 24 hours, we'd forget 90% of the stuff in that haunt.
Yeah.
It'd all blur together.
Yeah.
And that's how your customers are going to view it. That's how most people are with a haunt. They don't remember every single room. They don't remember every single sequence.
Right. And it's especially important for us to do that because we are usually visiting multiple haunts on a night. And we don't want them to
blur together.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to do that, but we don't want our notes to do that.
Yeah. And I'm really glad I was actually, it was in the YouTube channel a little bit Friday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things I did was I listened to some of our notes from the Atlanta trip. And went over those and talked about how we talked about things. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that wasn't that on.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we would do three or four haunts a night.
Yeah.
dear God, that was crazy and stupid without the aid of like Japes and the Lost Souls tour making it making it so much more manageable.
Yeah.
I learned that that trip taught me the real value of a haunt tour.
Yeah. Well, the two of them combined.
Yeah, the two of them combined, yeah. The stress level in Atlanta was way fucking higher than the stress level in Chicago.
Definitely.
Woo. The Atlanta, man, I still kind of get heart palpitations thinking about trying to make those haunts.
Yeah.
Tearing down windy country roads to get Camp Blood in.
Yeah.
Anyways, what the hell were we talking about? Oh, yeah. Customers only remember one or two things. So anyways, the question is, how do you build the rooms that really stick in their mind? Because while you want to give a good overall haunt experience, if you don't have any high points, you risk the whole experience blending together.
Right.
And the example I'll give for that to me was Basement of the Dead in Chicago. An amazing queue line.
Yeah.
I remember the queue line stupid vividly. Yeah. It was a good haunt. I don't remember thinking it wasn't a bad haunt, but it was all on like the same keel throughout. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I remember the feel of the haunt and the look of the haunt, but nothing specific.
Right.
Is that fair?
That's
it's a good haunt. You should definitely go. The queue line alone is worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just didn't have a particular high point that really stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
So on that note, how do you build the room that does? Now, we're going to be talking about this from a customer's perspective, not a haunter's perspective. The way I'm approaching this in my head is we are customers talking to haunt builders.
Yes.
But bear in mind, we are not normal haunt customers.
Right.
So everything we say may be completely invalidated. I acknowledge that.
Yeah. That's true for every episode, though.
This one more than most, though. Because what sticks in our mind when we go through a haunt may not be the same thing as a regular customer.
I know.
I don't know how normal people think.
No.
I've never been one.
No.
But anyways, and also worth noting, all of the things we're going to talk about in a little bit, you can use more than one approach. You can combine, mix and match approaches to really make something powerful. In fact, I think that's the ideal solution, honestly.
Yeah.
So the answer to which is the best one, all you can do. But before we begin, a couple of previous episodes you may want to check out. Episode 157, 10 Unique Things We've Seen in Haunts. We talk about some of our favorite rooms. We might touch on some of them again here. And episode 149, 10 Habits of Really Great Haunts, we talked about the concept of having a peak room, a best room that really stands out, a gimmick, a hook, or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
So, that was in 149. Okay, approach one, spectacle.
Yeah.
Now, we mentioned this idea in the last room episode. But every time I've seen a really good, most of the times I've seen a spectacle room, it's not been the last room.
No, it's usually the first, if it's...
It's usually either the first or one of the next to last rooms.
Yeah.
Like with the examples I could think of, talking about Statesville Prison, with the Jack-in-the-Box room and all the everything stacked up to the ceiling.
Oh, okay, yeah. Where it just changed theme completely.
Yeah, it just changed theme, but it was spectacle. Evil Intentions, we talked a lot mm-hmm. about how in their previous location, though they're the same location, just a different side of the same. Evil Intentions is complicated. We're actually talking about them in the news.
Yeah.
But they had the church sequence where you go outdoors and there's this big, huge set that just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And pops out. I was like, holy shit. And, of course, one of my favorite examples of spectacle is Netherworld with the giant tree room.
Only because you got God.
Yeah, I got God in that one. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I got God. Uh-huh. I'm happy when I got God. Get God. Get yes. God. I don't know. That was grammar work. I don't know. But it was a great room in that they had a very huge tree in the center. It created a lot of verticality. And you're not looking where the scare is coming.
Right.
Thing is this, most haunts are pretty claustrophobic in nature. And that's kind of by design. We make smaller rooms so we can fit more in. We have 8-foot panels, so we have claustrophobic ceilings a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
We build claustrophobically. That's not necessarily bad. But the chance to really open it up and have a spectacle, have something large,
mm-hmm.
is really tempting. And particularly important is playing with that verticality. Having something where people can look up and go, whoa.
Yeah.
That's something.
It is. And lots of times people forget to look up.
Yeah.
One of my favorite details, Well, I'll tell two favorite details from Haunts. One was at Statesville, where they put in the men's prison and the women's prison, they put things in the ceiling where that men or women would use.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was pretty clever.
Yeah, it was.
And at 13th Gate, when you're going through the London sequence, when you look up, it is a starry night. It's indoors.
Yeah.
But it is a starry night, and it. I remember the first time seeing that, and it was just
and I love how simple of a thing it was to do.
Yeah.
They just have a black fabric cloth go across the top with this little, like, LED lights through it.
Or pinholes.
Pinholes
with a light above it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was one or the other. I mean, I haven't been up there. But yeah. Either way, it's a simple design, but it's very effective.
Yeah.
And even if you don't look directly at it, it adds to the illusion of being outdoors, even though you're very much inside a metal warehouse building in Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically having a lot of space with a lot going on can really be something memorable. Now, remember, you have to fill the space with motion and activity. It's not good to have it just be empty.
Right.
It's got to actually, you have things going on, do things. So that may take a lot of people to do, and it may also harm throughput.
Right.
As for most of the haunt, people have been kind of channeled. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when you give them this new open space, or at least the appearance of something open, they may freeze.
Right. Now, you can still, you know, use prop-based
layout
absolutely. To guide them where they need to go.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons why I'm a big proponent of combining prop-based layout and traditional wall-based layout.
Right.
Because the wall-based layout gives you the claustrophobia.
Mm-hmm.
And the prop-based layout gives you the chance to open it up and have that... that difference.
Right.
I've often talked about doing our small home haunt. If my fantasy year, it'll probably never happen, would be to do an entirely prop-based layout haunt.
Yeah, that would be difficult.
It's doable.
And it is doable.
But it would be difficult. You're right. One of the reasons I want to do it is because it's difficult, though.
Well, no, I think it's more because with prop-based layout, you could see everything.
Yeah.
And
hiding
the
stairs and things would be much more difficult. I agree.
Yeah.
But
you can see everything coming up.
We can find ways to hide scares, even across the room like that.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing about spectacle. You don't always need a scare. One of them, another one I really remember was the classic House of Shock sacrifice room.
Mm-hmm.
Was a good example. Spectacle had verticality.
Yeah.
It was a big open space. And it actually comes back because this one combines approaches. But one of the things about it that made it really interesting for me was that it didn't actually have a scare in it.
Right.
It nothing went boo gotcha.
No.
Nothing jumped out. Nothing went bang. Nothing.
No.
Nothing happened. The worst that would happen is there was sometimes the guy throwing pages out of the Bible or whatever in there.
Yeah.
That was the closest thing. People would get in your personal space and make you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But there was no traditional scare.
Right.
Now, you can definitely do scares.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also possible to be really memorable just by making people super uncomfortable and giving them a sense of wonder for a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just it. We tend to, and we're guilty of this too, we tend to explore only the startle kind of fear.
Mm-hmm.
When there's a whole wide, wonderful spectrum of fear we can discuss and play with. Mm-hmm. Maybe that should be a future episode. The spectrum of fear.
Yeah.
If you like that idea for an episode, let us know at hauntweekly.com and hauntweekly on Twitter and Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know. I'm curious. You can also comment on the YouTubes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The second is a unique scare. Freaks of Fear and Rise are the two that I come to mind for this. Freaks of Fear, we talked previously in 157 about the giant bird that swoops over you. This is a trail haunt near Atlanta, and it would swoop over your head, and it's just, fuck me, it's effective, you know?
Yeah.
You know it ain't going to hit you, but your body sure as hell don't know it's going to hit. Your brain got it figured out, but your body doesn't.
Yeah.
Exactly. And Rise had one of my favorite scares. I remember the very first time we hit it.
Mm-hmm.
The double drop panel room, where basically you walk into a room, it's basically 8 feet long,
mm-hmm.
and they've basically taken panels and turned them sideways and made them drop panels.
Right.
And on both sides, and they hit at the same time. So basically, you go from a room that's very claustrophobic on either side of you
mm-hmm.
to just boom, suddenly there's, you're basically in hell.
Yeah.
Got people on either side of you reaching to grab you. It's very, very unique use of a boo hole that I saw get a lot of people.
Yeah, it did. And it actually sparked our disappearing wall.
Yeah.
Because we had been talking about doing an 8-foot drop panel.
Yeah.
We weren't sure exactly how to do it, and then somebody else already had it, so then we had to come up with something new.
Yeah. And ours, basically, the idea was, how do we create a drop panel in which not only is there a boo hole,
right,
but the whole person can step through,
right,
and come at you. Suddenly, a person.
Yes.
Was the idea.
Kids that were here over the summer helping was like, that's like the reverse blanket trick that's online.
Yes,
that
it
was
is.
Going around last year.
Yeah, the one with the dog. Yeah,
yeah, you did
it,
yeah,
the
exactly.
Mean thing you do to your dog. Don't do that to your puppy.
No.
You break your little puppy's heart. Do you want to break your little puppy's heart? That's what I thought. But yes, I mean, yeah, it's exactly that. It's the reverse of the blanket trick, and it's super effective. It always seems to hit.
Yeah.
It requires a little bit of instruction to use. We keep finding out year after year.
Yeah.
But no, it's a really great, great and unique. I think it's one that is unique to us.
Mm-hmm.
Now here's the thing: it may not be the best scare in terms of fear. The effectiveness of a scare hinges on the timing. And it hinges more on the timing and the positioning than it does the uniqueness. I mean, a good, well-placed drop panel may be the most pedestrian thing in a haunt, but dear God, you put it in the right place. We've seen Ellie get got by well-placed drop panels.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. It's like, and they were targeting her. That's the only reason it wasn't me getting got on that one.
Right.
That's not me being tough. Oh, Ellie got, no, no. They were fucking with her.
Yeah.
Deliberately. That was at Waterloo.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so chainsaws still scare people. Drop panels scare people. That stuff works, and it's not very unique. It may not be the best fear scare, but believe me, showing people something new that they've never seen, they'll probably remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah. A unique scare is often more memorable than the scare that got the highest pitch scream.
Yeah, definitely.
So, something to think about. All right. Approach number 3. The plot payoff. Examples are for this for me were Massacre, Haunted House, The Insanitarium, thank you for the correction, Crystal, and The House of Shock.
Yeah.
Now, The House of Shock's a really good example of the plot payoff system.
Yes.
Go ahead.
For the most part.
For the most part.
Yeah.
Well, the thing with The House of Shock was they would do the stage show.
Right.
Have a big whoop-de-doo, Laura Bly will come out, would zap the preacher dude.
Yeah.
And then you start letting in, and Laura Bly, of course, goes off stage. Well, he was in the last room.
Right.
He was the one doing the sacrifice room, which why I'm on him. So you have this, like I said, this huge spectacle room. It's a giant space, lots of verticality. He's up on like a 1.5-story, you know, caves like cliff edge or something, doing a sacrifice, supposedly bringing his boss in life. Which, honestly, who wants to bring their boss and more in their lives? I mean, did you really think this one through, Belial? I'm just asking.
Yeah.
He's going to be in your shit all the time now. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But, yeah, seriously. But it was great because it kind of provided an end to the story they were trying to tell, an end to the narrative.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And basically, setup and payoff are a key concept in film and storytelling. The idea is pretty simple. You set up something, you plant an idea or a mystery in people's heads. Who is so-and-so? Mm-hmm. Who's Japes' daughter? That was from Massacre, Haunted House.
Right, Willow.
Willow, yeah. God, I couldn't remember the name, thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't know why I'm drawing a blank on that. Which is like such a great name, I should have no trouble remembering. I don't know
right.
why.
We've been working outside today.
Yeah, we've been out in 95-degree heat doing heavy work, so...
Yeah.
In our defense, our brains are a little more shot than usual. I mean, I apparently spelled it Insanatorium.
Yeah, I know.
That's not the name of the haunt, Jonathan.
It's not, but it's okay.
Anyways, but the idea is you set up a mystery, you set up a character, you set up a conflict early.
Right.
Carry through the haunt, and in your big reveal room, you pay it off somehow.
Mm-hmm.
One way that's been done, I've seen this done less effectively, was at Terror on the Coast.
Okay.
Terror on the Coast set up this evil clown character. They set it up in the marketing material that they did. They set it up on the website. Hey, come meet. Can't remember the clown's name now. But they set it up.
Yeah.
And then when you run into them, it's just a random moment in the haunt.
Well, and see, yeah, I don't even remember all of that. I remember the mortuary using a stock character in their promotion and then not seeing the character anywhere in the haunt and being disappointed.
Yeah, and then discovering the advertisement actually you could buy the footage on like what's it's the Envato site.
Yeah.
Basically you could buy it was a stock video you could buy for like $50 or something.
Yeah.
It's like Christ. Yeah. So think about this in terms of your marketing material too. Very important here. If you're setting up characters, you're setting up premises in the marketing material, you're a great chance to have your best or your hook room is to pay that off.
Right.
Like, and this is going back to the mortuary. We'll kick back around to the mortuary. The years they teased Ravencroft.
Yeah.
And then paid him off two-thirds of the way through the haunt. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
That was a pretty memorable payoff.
Yeah.
We're going to come back to Ravencroft. But, yeah, tease a story either through marketing or through the haunt. Ideally, also with both, marketing and the haunt itself.
Right. Yeah, and that's one of those things that we've always talked about doing but have never had time.
No.
Is telling our story through small vignettes throughout the summer and the lead up to the haunt. But we've never had the time to do it.
Yeah. And once again, though, you don't necessarily need a scare in this sequence if you're doing the climax.
Yeah.
The reveal, if you've built up the tension enough, the reveal is going to be the scare.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, a good example of that goes to Massacre Haunted House with Willow. All through the haunt, and this is kudos on the storytelling here. There was, beware of Willow. Look out for Willow. Willow's coming.
Yeah.
Like, who the fuck is this Willow chick?
Yeah.
The whole time you're going there, who the fuck is this? Yeah. I'm getting interested though, right?
Yeah.
And then they have the ritual room where she is. There's not a scare in that room, but you're definitely not hanging out there very long.
Right. Because you don't want Willow to get you.
Yeah, you don't want that. No.
Exactly.
The payoff was the scare. Yeah. It works. It can really, really work. And I remember that room very well with all the dancing girls and all the stuff going on. It was like ritual, not like dances.
Yeah.
When you say dancing girls, you probably get the wrong image of what was in that room.
Yeah.
When I say that. Let's back to it. Anyways. Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily need a scare. It can include one, but it doesn't necessarily need it. And this is just basically giving the customer something to look forward to and then paying it off.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
So if you're going...
Judging from the end of Game of Thrones and how well that's gone, setup and payoff may not be as easy as I think.
Yes. But, so if you're going to MHC and you're going to visit Massacre, let us know what you think of how they did
absolutely.
On the payoff.
I'll be eager to hear. I hope they're doing the absolute full show. We were there in season. I hope they're able to do the full show with all that stuff. It was really, really great. And that's a good reason to go to MHC, is to get a study there.
Yeah.
All right, approach number four, my personal favorite, just because I love it when haunts do this to me.
Yeah.
Break rule expectations and rules.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my favorite examples are Necropolis 13 and 13th Gate, one very magical and amazing year.
Yes, one specific scare.
Oh, God. One of my favorite scares of all time. But yeah, basically, with a haunt, you unintentionally, even without realizing it, you're setting up rules and expectations.
Exactly.
Now, I'm going to use Necropolis as the easy example here because it's the easiest one to jump on for me. Necropolis always had zombies. Everywhere you're going through that haunt, there are zombies.
Yeah.
They're either behind boo holes or on the other side of grates and they're reaching through trying to get you, but they never have direct access to you.
Right.
So the last big scare, is the zombies knock over the grate and now you're face to face with them and there ain't shit protecting you.
Yeah. And people run.
And people haul ass. It works.
Yeah.
They set up the expectation. I don't know if they did this on purpose or not. I'm going to assume they did because they're pretty good at it. They set up the expectation of the gates will always hold and then defied it at the end.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Simple, elegant. It works. 13th Gate did something similar one year with the claustrophobia tunnels. We went through three or four claustrophobia tunnels. It felt like a lot.
It was two long ones, and then it was a half one to get to where you're going.
Yeah, okay.
With the story.
So you go through two claustrophobic tunnels, and it's sort of nothing is really on the other side.
Right.
And you establish, oh, these are just transition periods. We're going through a hallway. This is to keep us from just bolting.
Yeah.
I get it. Okay, fine. So one, that's the noise I make going through it because I'm holding it open. Two, then third, and then you're in this hellscape room.
Yeah.
This beautiful hellscape where basically it looks like dead bodies are piled up waist high and you're wading through them because they have one of the half-height claustrophobia tunnels and there's people on top of it trying to reach out to you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, your brain had been set up to be let out into another open area.
And just nothing, basically.
Yeah.
A big load of nothing.
Yeah.
And then they said, nah, this one lets you out into a hellscape scene. Bye!
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, our brains are hardwired to pick up patterns.
Yeah.
That's what we do. We are basically semi-intelligent monkeys. We pick up patterns and run with it.
Yeah.
And when you fuck with those patterns, people freak out a little.
Yeah. Yeah, it seriously broke our brains, and we've talked about it forever.
Ever since, yeah.
Yeah.
And I want to do something like that if we ever have a bigger space. We don't have the room to pull this one off.
Yeah.
As easily.
We did something the next year, the year that they took it out of theirs. We did a closet that ended into a hellscape because we had done a closet the year before.
And that's
so people come in
and that is true. We did kind of maybe unintentionally do it because we had done closets previously without really much payoff.
Yeah.
Other than they were transition hallways.
Right.
So we did like closet 2 years, even though we changed themes. And the next year it's into a hellscape.
Yeah.
So anyone who's...
No, that was completely intentional.
Anyone who's a Bernie Baxter completionist got a special treat that year.
Yes, exactly.
If you're not a Bernie Baxter completionist and you're in New Orleans, I'm very sorry for you. But yeah. Long story short, you can play with that and do a lot of great things with it. And this actually goes even beyond just particular scares. If you are an outdoor haunt, change it up and do something very claustrophobic.
Yeah.
In the same vein, if you're an indoor haunt, take them outside for a second, like Evil Intentions did.
Yeah.
That change, that mess with expectations, causes our brain to start paying attention again.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing is, when we're thinking we know the pattern, we stop really paying attention and remembering things.
Right.
We're just going with the flow, right?
Exactly.
We're not really paying attention. Those are zombies on the side of a gate. This is just another claustrophobia tunnel. This is just another closet. We're not paying attention. We know the pattern.
Yeah.
Our monkey brains are having fun just recognizing the pattern and running with it. Then when you mess with it, the brain kicks back on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit. I better be really, really paying attention right now, is what it thinks.
Yeah, exactly.
So here's my advice. Go through your haunt. From the perspective of a customer, think about the types of things they're going to expect. Are they going to expect a drop panel in certain places every time?
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to expect an actor at a certain place every time? Are they going to expect a certain type of contact or touch or whatever every time? Figure out what they're expecting and then fuck with it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's another... Well, no. We won't go into that.
All right. Well, approach five is the last of our approaches for this one. Interactivity. I mentioned the Mortuary of the Ravencroft years.
Right.
And Necromanor also, too. Well, unfortunately for Necromanor, their most memorable room was their first room.
Right.
I don't necessarily agree with doing that for a lot of reasons. I think the first room has too many. We'll get into that in a minute.
Okay.
But long story short, if you've got a great character who can really do the interactive stuff, who can really talk, give them a great room. It'll be amazing.
Yeah.
There's a tendency, and it's an understandable tendency, to stick all the talkers into the queue line.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where you get the most opportunity to talk to people.
Right.
They're going to be there the longest.
Well, so, and you're not slowing down your flow.
Exactly.
By
not messing up your throughput. It's it's where you put the talkers.
Yeah.
That makes sense. But maybe save one for inside the haunt. Because a hair of interactivity can really mess with people's minds, especially if it's not been a haunt that focuses on interactivity.
Right.
And a really great character doing really great things. I would also say, and Sanitarium unintentionally did this too.
Mm-hmm.
But that was actually in the rules room with the steampunk girl, who was just an amazing character and an amazing actor. And frankly, she deserves like a medal or something for that performance.
Well, how do you know she didn't get one?
I don't, actually. You're
exactly.
Right, I don't. Yeah, but people tend to really remember those that they interact with.
Mm-hmm.
A great character can charm, can scare, and do more. Take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Let those characters shine. Let them have fun. And let the audience have fun with them. They will remember it. Because that's a fairly unique experience inside a haunt.
Yeah, it is.
Because typically when you deal with interactivity, like that's one of the things about Dead Rising, which is also at MHC, mm-hmm. is they're heavily interactive focused. So their most memorable room, it's not most memorable because it's interactive, because they have multiple interactive sequences.
Right.
But they end it, they have multiple, like I said, multiple interactive sequences in it. And I do remember the characters.
Yeah.
They have stuck with me.
Yeah, I remember character to character, but there I know that there were more rooms without as interactive characters.
Yeah, there was, I think, a living room sequence you passed through at one point. I'm being vague.
Yeah.
I'm trying to not do spoilers for those going to MHC, but
there are
non-interactive sequences, but the interactive ones definitely have stuck in my brain more.
Yeah.
But yeah, so where do you place this room? If you think you know what the hook is, if you think you know what your best room is going to be, where do you put it? That's a tough question, and I don't have a very good answer to it. Because we've gone through and we've named all these examples, and it's like a scatter plot. It's just they're all over in various locations.
Yeah, they are.
Sometimes it's the first room, sometimes it's the last room, sometimes it's the middle room, sometimes it's da-da-da-da-da. Well, if I were doing this purely from a storytelling perspective...
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the way I tend to think of things. I would put it after the halfway point.
Yeah.
The first room has a lot of responsibilities that go beyond being a memorable, amazing room.
Exactly.
It sets the tone for the haunt. It sets throughput up. It's got a lot of jobs. It doesn't necessarily need the pressure of also being the best room.
Yeah.
It's already really, really important. The final room's got the same thing. It's going to be the last room. It's going to be what people in the queue line see. And scares that make people run aren't necessarily the most memorable.
Yeah.
But sometime in the final half, usually around the 2/3 mark, think about the 3-act structure of a story, right where the climax would be.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
It does.
Now, that not literally, and I know a 3-act structure isn't literally, this is 1/3 of the story, this is 1/3 of the story, this is 1/3 of the story.
Yeah.
But the same concept applies.
Right.
It needs to be late enough to be easily remembered, a natural point to put your climax, but there needs to be a chance to cool down and do something else with the exit, I think. Which is one of the reasons why I think House of Shock had it about right in a way by putting their big spectacle room right before that last hallway. Now, I wish they had done more with that hallway.
Yeah.
But the idea was there.
It was.
The idea was very good and very much there. Now, if you're wondering why this is so important and why you should be doing this. We see a lot of haunts. I know we see more than
maybe
most.
Maybe a few.
Maybe a few. Yeah. A couple. A smidge.
A smidge.
A smidge. Yeah. A smankering. Yeah. A couple.
Yeah,
a couple.
Dabble.
A little bit. A dabble. when we think back to the haunts we've seen, we struggle to remember more than a room or two from each haunt.
Yeah.
And like I said, but haunts that didn't have those high points, we barely remember at all.
Exactly.
And a good example is Freaks of Fear.
Yeah.
Freaks of Fear had everything in the world going against it that night.
Yeah.
It was a trail haunt. It was raining. They had lost like half of their actor staff.
Because they were technically no one's closed.
They were technically closed. They didn't think anyone was coming.
Right.
We drove our Kia Spectra up the steepest, wettest incline I think it's ever been up in its life.
Well, yeah, that our car has been.
That our car's ever been up. And we get there. So they had everything going against them. But we have talked about it nonstop because of that damn bird.
Yeah.
That's just it. That one amazing thing. Yeah. And it hooked in our mind and we've not forgotten about it. There are other haunts that we went to in Atlanta I can't tell you two things about.
Yeah.
Without listening to the notes.
Right. No, I completely agree. And I can remember, things that happened at haunts, but I can't put it with the haunt that it was at.
Yeah.
Going back to the reason why we need to do the notes right after.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is what people are going to remember.
Yeah.
This is what will be in the reviews people give you online.
Right. And they should be positive things, because
yes.
There are some haunts that have very negative memories attached to them.
Yeah. Not going to name these haunts.
No.
The haunts where the handicapped guy, the guy with the cane, I shouldn't say, fell off a bridge.
Right. Well, also, there was one in Atlanta where you had to crawl. And that was not fun.
Or I don't know what it is with Atlanta and whiteout mazes.
Yeah.
I don't know why that's a thing in that area, but it seemed like half the haunts we went to had one.
Yeah. It's like, oh, this is cool the first time.
No, it wasn't cool the first time, and it wasn't cool the fifth either.
Not really.
Yeah, this gives you a chance to make sure that the most memorable thing in your haunt is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, like it aggravates me to no end that whenever I think of 13th Gate, one of the very first rooms that comes to mind is the fucking mammoth.
The farting mammoth.
I hate that room. Like, it's been there for so long. I really hope that they are going to upgrade that room.
You know, though, that room did actually, result in one of my favorite members as a haunt customer.
Yeah.
Because that room has fundamentally not changed the entire time we've been going.
Exactly.
And that's so we knew where the actor Boohole was.
Ingrained.
Yeah, we knew the actor Boohole is. And I looked at him just instinctively because I thought he was going to jump out at me. And he looked at me and he made eye contact and he kind of sank. But this was the time we were with that group, with that guy that was like super easily scared at everything.
Yeah.
So I just like flashed two back.
Yeah.
And he just kind of nods and then he jumps out and nails him.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, on our team up.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that was fun. But yeah, and it's funny you say that because it's like when I think of 13th, I mean, I remember the room in 13th Gate that I had that reaction to was the B room, which mercifully is gone.
Yeah, I know. And I think maybe it's just because it has been there so long and.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's beautifully done.
Yes.
It's quality like everything else. It's just, it's been there a while.
The craftsmanship is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, everything in it is beautiful and amazing.
I've never completely understood it. And I don't like that.
Yeah. Anyways, but yeah, this gives you the chance to make sure the most memorable thing in your haunt is a positive one.
Yeah.
And that can make the difference between a positive review and a negative review. Because you got to remember, a lot of reviews are written days later.
Yeah.
Like Google will send that message or Facebook will send that message. Hey, you visited such and such. Mm-hmm. Would you like to write a review? And it's like 48 hours later and they have forgotten every goddamn thing.
Nope.
Exactly. So, yeah, this is your chance to make sure the thing they remember is positive.
Yeah.
I mean, think of it as like the hook in a song.
Mm-hmm.
The hook in a song is what causes it to get stuck in their brain and make them want to listen to it again and again. And I'm hiccuping again and again and again.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I think that there should be more focus on trying to create that room. And a lot of haunts don't do it.
No.
So, yeah, for all the focus on the first and the last rooms, I think there should be more focus on the best room, whatever you want your hook room to be, whatever you want that key room to be.
What makes you you? What defines you? We've done a podcast on that, too.
Yeah. We've done a lot of podcasts. I mean, we've done about 183 in about 10 minutes. We've done about 183, about 5 minutes, actually.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's about all we really have for this.
Yeah.
So long story short, Put your energy in what people are going to remember.
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as where that room should go, make it what works with your flow, what works with your story. But, yeah, make sure that people walk away where the strongest memory is an amazing one.
Yeah.
That's just some of the ways that it's been done and ways we've seen it done. Well, on that note, everyone, thank you very much for spending the past 45 minutes to an hour with us.
Yes.
Greatly appreciate you hanging out with us. This has been Haunt Weekly, episode 183. You can find us at hauntweekly.com, Haunt Weekly on Twitter, Haunt Weekly on Facebook, youtube.com/hauntweekly. Ha ha! There it is again.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why I turn French every time I say it.
I don't know either.
is our YouTube channel. Once again, thank you, TJ.
Yeah.
You can also find us on Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever finer podcasts are sold and or distributed. But until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this has been episode 183, The Best Room. We will see you next week for episode 184, which is divisible by four. It's time to do the news. We will see you then, and we've got a lot to talk about. Our Haunt and Leak chat has been active this month.
Yes, it has.
So we got a lot coming at you next week. Stay tuned for that. See you then.